streets like the Gutter, or Brooklyn Bowl in Williamsburg, or Bowlmore Lanes inside the old New York Times building in Times Square, are jettisoning bowling into a glittery new era where the sport once ruled by Don Carter and Dick Weber now is ruled by celebrity chefs and craft cocktails. Pin action memorializes the world where you kept score by hand. An all-night match left you with a bloated and bleeding bowler's thumb by sunrise, and a combination of tobacco and lane oil smudged your calloused fingertips. That is the world I began to learn about when I spent long afternoons listening to the avuncular and salty-haired regulars at Lee Mark and Maple talk about the old days. I was 11 years old at the time. The guys would tell me, for instance, about a bowling alley that once existed down a stairway accessible from the Fort Way Theater in Diker Heights. How that was where Brooklyn's own Johnny Petraglia, one of the sport's overarching legends, started turning the heads of sharks and shysters with his talent at age 14. By the time I was growing up near Diker Heights, that place next to the theater where Petraglia once made waves was a gun range, its historical significance in sports history completely effaced. The theater itself, where I had gone to see many movies with my cinephile father over the years, closed down in 2005. A Chinese supermarket took its place in 2007. Names other than Petraglia's would find their way into the stories I had heard at Lee Mark and Maple. Names like Richie Hornreich, Mike Lemangello, Mark Roth, Ernie Schlegel, Mike Ciccello, Kenny Barber, Ira the Whale Katz, Hank Burrow, Dirty Willie, Frank Medici, Psycho Dave, and so many others. It all sounded like some page torn out of a Jimmy Breslin book. But this was real. These were real people, real lives. And they had passed through the very place where I first got acquainted with the sport of bowling in the distant aftermath of so much sordid history. I could tell from the looks in the eyes of those who told me about these characters and their stories that there was a lot more to those guys than a name. In pro shops around town, I gazed in awe at memorabilia like bowling balls with Mark Roth's signature on them, as if I had discovered the signature of God. I still was too young to really understand why I felt that way back then. I only had the impression that something very big had happened there long before I came around. The more time went on, the more I wanted to know about it. And the more bowling drifted into the background of my blooming love affair with literature and writing as I got older, the more I realized I was developing an ability to communicate my passion for the subculture into which my childhood immersed me. Pin action is the culmination of that discovery. As the stories that had absorbed me back when I was a kid listening to the old guys at Brooklyn bowling alleys lingered with me over the years, I developed an insatiable desire to know more about the New York City my parents and grandparents knew. I wanted to know about what things were like back before the 802 Club on 64th Street and 8th Avenue in Brooklyn, where Saturday Night Fever was filmed, became a medical building. I wanted to know more about the New York where Melody Lanes and Sunset Park was not yet the only place in southwest Brooklyn where you could bring the kids for a few games of bowling on a Sunday afternoon. What was it like when bowling alleys were as plentiful in New York City as the newsstands? Remember those? I started asking around, beginning with my parents, and much later the action bowlers whose stories I tell in this book. The things they told me gave me a glimpse of the way things were, just as the old guys at Lee Mark and Maple had back in my childhood, and I was hooked. This book started storming within me, and I felt as though I never would forgive myself if I failed to let it out. I once asked former action bowler Red Bassett, for instance, about the 802 Club. "When we were kids hanging out in Bay Ridge, we would sneak into the 802, he told me. The owner would see us and scream at us and kick us out. But after Johnny did a lot of good things on tour, oh, now they couldn't get enough of us. Then we were something, you know, and I just went along." Memories like that one are scraps of an irretrievable past I tried to salvage here in the pages of Pin Action. Bassett and so many others left pieces of themselves somewhere back in the bygone world.